clock over, you know, working on your off days. Hey, Angie, y'all, don't you know, girl, I need to talk to you. I've been trying to figure out how to do something, but you know, and then, hey, there I am.
Community connecting is what we do. Community connecting is who we are. What you have just seen and could barely hear was a snippet from a documentary that was created by Mr. Rick Falco, an international journalist who travels the world and documents innovative projects. And we're proud to say he thought enough of our work to include us in this particular documentary. Our work comes from the voice of community. Our work is a result of listening to community. It is not that a group of professionals sat in a room and decided that this is a good concept. It is not because some researchers determined needs and said, this is where we need to go. It is because community said, we need help with access to health care. So we listened. We listened formally and we listened informally. We used the deliberative democracy processes that we learned from the Kettering Foundation, and we heard all that community members had to say. And once we heard what they said, we recognized some things that we thought we could address. They particularly focused on the fact that they did not know about health resources and what was available. They did not know how to access those resources. They didn't trust institutions, and the majority of the people in the Delta are African Americans, and you know we come with our story. And so trust was an issue. And then because we are an impoverished community, and poverty is one of the greatest oppressors there is, our priorities are centered around food, clothing, and shelter. We're not interested in preventive health care often. We're not interested in health maintenance. We're interested in how to survive everyday living. So we learned from community, we listened, and we knew that in order to address these things, we didn't have the wisdom in and of ourselves, so we developed some partnerships. And as we developed partnerships, they introduced us to other people. We even had the pleasure of working with Dr. Carl Rush, who's at the back of the room, who is a big guru on community health workers. And we were able to look at best practices nationwide. We went all over the U.S. looking at what others had done and how they had done it. So we stole concepts. We took from over here and over there and everywhere we could get an idea, and we took it back and we adapted it to our community. We adapted it to our needs. We adapted it to our culture. We decided that we would make it fit the processes that were appropriate for our community. And so we created something called Community Connecting. Community had said, as we listened to them, that in the areas of trust, that they actually did trust people that they knew, people that looked like them, people that lived in their neighborhood, people who had had similar issues as they had had, people who stood on the corner with them and smoked cigarettes or drank coffee or whatever it may be at that particular corner. And so we knew that there were some non-traditional leaders in community that we had to identify and begin to utilize them. We knew that we needed lay people to help other lay people to access health resources. And so in addition to the lay people, in addition to developing partners, in addition to stealing concepts and creating our own model, we developed what's called Community Connecting. We did a demonstration project where we were able to show Medicaid savings of $3 to every $1, and they funded us, moving us from a project that served three counties to a project that served 15 counties. And today we serve 15 counties plus Pulaski County and Little Rock. The 15 counties are in the Delta, the Arkansas region of the Delta. How many minutes? One. Okay. So I want to ask all of the community connectors in the room with Tri-County Rural Health Network to please stand. These people are able to motivate, encourage, persuade, and convince others to take advantage of opportunities that will be beneficial for them. Community connecting is what we do. Community connecting is who we are.
So I'll start again. Hi, everyone. So thank you. Great. Super. Thank you. I guess that where I was going to go with this is as follows, is how many of you have ever stepped foot into a prison or jail? This is a standard slide I have to show, is that we are funded by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and this is our disclaimer. That's the majority of the individuals in this room, which makes me really proud and kind of beam, because that's exactly how it ought to be, that oftentimes the individuals that are incarcerated and the communities that are afflicted with high incarceration rates are really hidden from our view. And I show this picture here is to show that unlike the kind of media depictions of those that are incarcerated, that the demographics of incarceration are changing. Undoubtedly, still yet, those that are incarcerated, which are 2.2 million individuals, one in every 100 adults in the U.S., is the highest, the United States has the highest rate of incarceration of any country in the world. Undoubtedly, we are still incarcerating poor folks of color, but the demographics are changing so that there are a cadre of individuals that are aging behind bars. And so oftentimes when I talk to audiences like this, people don't have this concept that there are chronic medical conditions in prisons. And so this is just to show is that 80% of those that are incarcerated have a chronic medical condition that warrants longitudinal primary care, 80%. And this includes basic physical health conditions like diabetes and high blood pressure. It includes mental health conditions like depression, like schizophrenia. And it also includes substance dependence, addiction to alcohol, as well as opiates, all of which ought to be attended in the primary care setting. When individuals come home from prison, about 85% of those don't have health insurance. And the majority of them have never learned how to access health care in the community. In fact, about 40% of individuals are diagnosed with a new condition while in prison. And so very much for these 2.2 million individuals that are incarcerated, this is a new experience coming home in terms of how to deal with their chronic medical conditions. And so it shouldn't surprise you that there are individuals' health worsen when they come home from prison. There are data that show that your chronic disease, be it HIV, be it substance dependence, worsens when you're incarcerated, actually gets better when you're reincarcerated, and then worsens again when you're incarcerated. There's an incredibly high risk of hospitalizations, even in the first 7 days following release, and there's a high risk of death. So even in the first 2 weeks following release, those that are incarcerated have about a 12 times increased risk of dying once they come home. And these are from largely preventable conditions like overdose, cardiovascular disease, depression, suicide, homicide, and then cancer. And there are, as many of you guys in the room may know, significant challenges to returning home that extend beyond kind of the healthcare system. So there is no discharge planning in most of the prison or jail systems. The Medicaid lapses, even in spite of the expansion with the Affordable Care Act. If you've been incarcerated for more than 12 months, in all likelihood, your Medicaid and Medicare are terminated. And those individuals that have been convicted of drug felonies still in certain states have lifelong bans in getting food stamps, Section 8 housing, federal education, scholarships, and even have lost the right to vote. And so it is with this notion, with kind of what I think are punitive policies that persist after a person has been incarcerated that really do impact a patient's health and the health of our communities, that we started the Transitions Clinic Network. And here in this photo is Ron Sanders, who is our first hired community health worker, greeting a patient in clinic. And Ron Sanders, like the many individuals in our communities, is an individual that has a history of incarceration and that has broken successfully through the cycles of reincarceration. And it's in this notion that we wanted to shift the paradigm, that instead of this gentleman here blowing on the puffer in prison and he comes home and faces these significant barriers to maintaining his health, instead of him doing it alone, without the support systems, that in fact he's greeted by a community health worker, a woman that leads that process of helping him get back to the healthy person he wants to get to, greets him with a warm hug, sees a provider in clinic who knows that he's been incarcerated and knows kind of what the health risks are specific to that incarceration, and that we follow the patients into the home environment to tackle issues like food insecurity, like barriers to getting a job given the bans on the boxes that our patients have to check, and like reintegrating with their families. We have done a randomized controlled trial in partnership with our patients using community-based participatory research approach, looking at outcomes that frankly aren't the most meaningful for our patients, aren't the most meaningful for our communities, but are the most meaningful in thinking about the sustainability of these models within healthcare systems, and found a significant reduction in a randomized controlled trial of showing decreased emergency department utilization among those that remain in care in the transitions clinic model. And it's based on that we've had the privilege of actually having the experience of trying to feel how it's scale up this program. We were awarded funding through the Healthcare Innovation Award mechanism to provide primary care to 2,000 plus primary patients leaving prison, 6 states in Puerto Rico. And the key point is this, is that we've done so in partnership with one of the most long-standing programs training in really edifying community health workers with the City College of San Francisco. And in doing so, we conceive of our work as really building a new national workforce. So unlike Sonia and her colleagues' experience of, trying to scale up in communities where the notion of community health workers is understood, we are building a new national workforce of individuals that all have a history of incarceration to work in community health centers. And one of our community health workers is here today. She'll be speaking in another session later at 2 p.m. I won't ask her to stand up, but she can wave her hand as Martha. And so I think, what is upon us now is that, given the real tremendous opportunity of health reform and the, I think, hopefully renewed interest by policymakers and community health workers, is that we are in this place of really trying to push a culture shift, less of a focus on healthcare and more of a focus on health and what that means for community health workers. And for me, in thinking about the work that we've been doing for the last 3 years funded by CMS, what it means is kind of really, really energizing the policy conversation to having individuals, policy leaders, really think about what that means and the primary role that community health workers ought to take in leading that transformation.